40 years ago this week, Richard Nixon resigned as president of the United States as a result of the Watergate scandal. But before that happened, he was at the height of his presidency, negotiating with China and Russia and managing the Vietnam War. A new book gives a window into that time. It's called The Nixon Tapes, and it contains transcripts of tapes that Nixon had recorded at the White House in Camp David between 1971 and 73. Douglas Brinkley and Luke Nichter are co-editors of the book, and they're with us from New York. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. And Luke, we should say, you have actually listened to all of the tapes. How many hours of tape are we talking about?
Well, a total of 3,700 hours. Of those, around 3,000 are currently released to the public. And if not all of them, then probably pretty close to all of them I've listened to.
And what is that like to listen to that much tape of Richard Nixon?
Well, you have an occasional dream where you hear Nixon's voice, and you know, I say there are some days and some nights where my wife Jennifer says, no Nixon today, please. And we have a little baby, and the little baby probably has heard the voice of Richard Nixon so often that she thinks he's one of her grandfathers or something.
Grandpa Dick. So now, Douglas Brinkley, remind us why Nixon decided to tape so much of his interaction in the White House.
Well, other presidents had taping systems. FDR did a little bit of taping. Certainly John F. Kennedy did quite a bit, particularly during the Cuban Missile Crisis. Lyndon Johnson kept tapes. What's unique about Nixon is the fact that it was voice activated. And so everything was getting picked up. And that's why it's such a massive trove of material. Scholars could actually be a fly on the wall and watch, if you like, the sausage factory of how policy is being made, and in Nixon's case, particularly foreign policy, because that's what he was most interested in.
Was that his intent, that scholars be able to look back and hear exactly the conversations that were going on?
No. That was definitely not his intent.
So what did he want?
Why did he want Luke and I taped? There's many reasons, but I think one is that he thought it was going to be a historic document for his own edification, that he'd be able to write a multiple-volume biography using the tapes as grist. And keep in mind, Nixon didn't see himself as merely a politician like Hubert Humphrey or George McGovern. He thought of himself as a statesperson on the level with Charles de Gaulle or Churchill, Mao Zedong, that he was a major figure. And these tapes would be invaluable for his personal use. And he'd also be able to double-check a record. If somebody took a swipe at Nixon, he'd be able to say, that's not what happened. I have a transcript of what happened.
And yet what has emerged and what is in your book shows a very complicated picture of Richard Nixon, as I suppose it would of anyone who gave up all of these recordings in this way. Let's listen to a little bit here. He almost sounds petty when talking about John F. Kennedy, who, of course, narrowly defeated him for the presidency in 1960. Let's listen to that.
Kennedy was cold. He treated his staff like dogs, particularly the secretaries and the others. He had no rug. He was not a beat man. He didn't read all kinds of things. And his staff created the impression of warm, sweet and nice to people. Didn't read lots of books, the philosopher and all that stuff. That was a pure creation of mythology.
Luke Nichter, what do you hear there? What is interesting to you about that?
I think you hear a lot of different things. A lot's been written already about Nixon's obsession with the Kennedys. And here you have Nixon agonizing over the fact that you have the Kennedy image of Camelot and, as he calls it, the mythology associated with that. And here you have Nixon, who thinks he's this tough guy and he's opening relations with our communist enemies during the height of the Cold War. And why isn't some of that image getting out? So it's very much he wants to be in charge of his image control.
Well, and you hear that as well in this clip. Let's take a listen to this.
What is the most important single factor we should come across out of these first 2 years? Guts. Absolutely. Guts. Do you agree with me?
Okay.
Intelligence, maybe. A president is expected to be intelligent.
He says a president is expected to have intelligence and guts there, Douglas Brinkley.
Well, that's right. And that he was there's a machoism there. He wants to be seen as somebody with guts. You know, he was born and grew up in California in a very hard-scrabble, almost desert-like arid environment. quite humble beginnings. And that milieu where he grew up, you needed to talk tough and be tough. And it's the land of the cowboy, you know, and you and men were men and that all of those cliches of the 20th century. And Nixon tries to be that in the White House. He knew history remembered big, bold things, not just competence, as Kissinger was suggesting.
One of the interesting things here is that the people who were in these recordings, besides Nixon, in many cases didn't know that they were being recorded.
Yeah, even Nixon's inner circle. I mean, even Chief of Staff Bob Haldeman knew, and a few of his deputies knew. And of course, the Secret Service ran the taping system. They changed the reels each morning and then usually in the afternoon. But among his other inner circle, John Ehrlichman didn't know, Henry Kissinger didn't know, Chuck Colson didn't know. They're all featured on this taping system.
Douglas Brinkley, what did you learn about President Nixon that you didn't already know? Because as we know, you know a lot about the presidents generally.
I didn't realize that he was so in charge of the Vietnam War when he came in, that he was actually micromanaging it, and that he had a lot of feuds with the Pentagon. And I'm also surprised at how somebody could be so brilliant and so smart, but yet be so cold and kind of missing a dot. Something is wrong on a lot of his commentary. He doesn't quite he hurts people with his language all the time. I knew that some of that existed, but it was more than I thought.
And what about you, Luke? What surprised you most about what you heard?
Well, staying with the subject of Vietnam, through 71, before the election year in 72, wasn't going very well for Nixon. His poll ratings before China were not particularly high. It was anything but a guarantee that he would be reelected a year later. And he says to Henry Kissinger in the conversations in the book that, you know, things aren't going very well and I would be willing to bow out, to not run for reelection. I've never heard that before. And you think today, well, how serious was he? Was this just Nixon talking? You have to remember, not in 2014, but in 1972, just 4 years before, in 1968, that's exactly what Lyndon Johnson did. And Nixon thought Vietnam had destroyed one president. It will not destroy two presidents. And if it's better for me to go away quietly, that's what I'm willing to do.
Douglas Brinkley, just wrap it up for us, if you would. Looking at the Nixon presidency in general, as you look at it in contrast with other presidencies, where does he rank for you?
Well, he's not ranked particularly high because I think the tapes have done so much damage to him. But he won a landslide in 72, and he does have some major achievements in domestic politics. Clean Air and Water, Endangered Species Act, or Nixon. And in foreign affairs, the recognition of going to China like he did in 72 is more and more important. In China, Nixon is revered. In the United States, he is not. He's ranked towards the bottom of the presidents. That's because, as Stanley Cutler had pointed out in his book, Abuses of Power, Watergate and the illegal activities associated with it and the thuggery that came out of the Nixon White House prevents him from becoming a folklore president like a Washington or a Lincoln.
Is Obama recording himself?
I don't believe so. I'm one of the historians that we, with Doris Kearns Goodwin and David Kennedy and Robert Carroll, we meet with the president once in a while. And I know he was fascinated by listening to the Lyndon Johnson tapes. He commented that he wishes that sometimes maybe he wish he did have a tape because he would have been able to people would have known how strong his conversations have been with Boehner and others. And hence it's lost to history because there is no taping system.
Well, at the very least, we hope that if President Obama has been taping himself and you do a book about it, that the quality of the tape is a little better so you don't have to strain to listen and find out what he's saying. Luke Nichter and Douglas Brinkley, editors of The Nixon Tapes, which is out now. Thanks both of you for joining us.
Thank you.
Enjoyed. Thanks so much.
Yep. And with a welcome today to our listeners on our newest station, WAMU in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. Here and Now is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service. I'm Jeremy Hobson.
I'm Robin Young. This is Here and Now.